Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your live connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Hello, and thanks for listening to today's inspiration. I'm your host, Lisa Berry, and you are in the right place if you are looking for love and laughter, and you're in the right place if you want to hear and learn something new and positive. I've been an on-air commercial broadcaster in the Detroit area for over 20 years, and I'm blessed to have this opportunity to connect with you through Body, Mind, Spirit Radio. And I'm super excited because I have a very special guest today. He is a best-selling author, highly acclaimed speaker, personal excellence coach, and creator of several programs, including a new program called Patient Pre-op Post-op Healing Therapy. Welcome, James Mates.
Well, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Just talking in the few seconds before we started, James all has several projects coming up. So we welcome you to join in the conversation. Here's our number, 646-378-0378. James has accomplished so much in his lifetime, but I want to give full disclosure. I first met James Mates when I was in college many years ago, and we were booking talent and entertainment for the students, and I booked you. And you were doing hypnotism at the time, which we all know involves the power of the mind. And I have to tell you, it made a lifelong, lasting impression on me. I was happy to find you on Facebook a few years ago. I actually saw you when you were in the Detroit area, probably just over a year ago. So you have done so much more, including authoring several books and programs, acting, business coaching, and I'm just thrilled for your latest project, which we will get to. But I was hoping we could first go back to the beginning a little bit, because it seems to me really everything you have done goes back to the power of the mind. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. And I'll give you a I'll bring you up a number of years in about 5 minutes.
Okay.
I graduated from college in California with a master's in theater and undergraduate in psychology. So I've always been interested in the mind, but my heart and soul was as in the theater. So I left college, and I was on the road for 2 years with two Shakespeare companies. And one, I lived in New Orleans for a year, and the woman who was Gypsy Rose Lee's sister, her name is June Havoc, brought in a hypnotist as a fundraiser. And this is, I think, 1970. So I went to the show, and it freaked me out. It scared me half to death. So I got up and I left, on top of which my girlfriend at that time was up there hypnotized. Now, I'm from the Midwest. You're from Michigan. I'm from Illinois. My family still lives there. So hypnosis, the only thing I knew about it was like Boris Karloff movies, right? So
right.
I thought, half of me said, this is garbage. This is all set up. People are playing along. And the other half of me just didn't know. So I kept going in and out of the room, and I let it go for about a year. And I came to New York to do soap operas and film acting, and I met someone. I mentioned this. And he said, well, you know, I can introduce you to someone who can explain it better than me. Now, life has these weird turns, and the someone I was introduced to, his name is Harry Ahrens. He's no longer with us, but he founded the Ethical Hypnosis Training Center. He had written 60 books. He was like a master, little short guy with a goatee and stuff, and whatever he saw in me, he took me under his wing, and I studied with him for many years, but I only spent 1 year before I started a clinic in New York, because I moved very quickly.
Yeah,
so
you went right into hypnotism.
The New York Hypnosis Center for 12 years.
Awesome.
And during that time, the first years, I mean, I'm learning and doing, so the first years I was doing weight, smoking, and all this stuff. 5 years.
You were doing what, did you just say?
Weight.
Oh, weight and smoking.
Okay. Self-confidence, and a few other things. And then I got basically bored with that, but all the time learning about the subconscious, stretching, growing, and then doing workshops. And the next 4 years, I worked primarily with athletics, improving athletes. I worked with the Green Bay Packers. I worked with powerlifting, golf. And then I found my niche. I started in a field called regression therapy. and worked with the New York Police Department and many other people for regressing back in a person's past, back in the subconscious, to retrieve information for witnesses or victims to crime or child abuse victims for forgiveness issues and so forth. So all that 12 years, I was also putting together the show that you saw because nothing like it had been done the way I was doing it. And so I'm out on the road doing that, and then I spun off from there doing a workshop called Positive Self-Image Training, which I was doing all over the place, and then a new one called Choices. In the meantime, I'm still acting and beginning to write. So that 12-year period was a tremendous growth period for me.
Do you think so? You were originally a skeptic of hypnotism. What can you tell us about it that would make people less likely to be a skeptic about hypnotism?
Well, I think the first is the word. The word hypnosis is I call it a bogus word. The fellow that coined it, Dr. James Braid in 1841, coined the word. He came out of mesmerism, and mesmerism was the science of mesmerizing. And he was a dentist, so he saw that when he did certain mumbo-jumbo things that they did at that time, that people went to sleep. So he called it hypnosis, hypnos, the Greek god of sleep. And he realized 2 weeks after he named it, and it spread like wildfire, that he made a mistake, that people were not asleep. They were in a heightened state of receptiveness. And the same state, the second thing that will convince people, it's a question really, if someone has ever been on a computer surfing and they forgot about time, they have read a book, they're reading a book and they forget they're holding the book because they become the book, or they're watching a movie and they get absorbed in the movie, or there's something called highway hypnosis. You drive for long periods of time and you go, huh, how did I get here? Because we operate on two levels all the time. Our conscious level, which I would like to talk about later, of how this works, because brain science has really given us a clue, and the subconscious, which is it doesn't think. So there's what I call a dual consciousness here. And so hypnosis is going into to a state that is totally focused. Martial artists, I did martial arts for 12 years. Martial artists do it. Musicians do it. Actors do it. Athletes do it. You know, I work a lot with archery. So when people forget who are doing archery that they're actually holding the bow. They're already in this state of total focus, so that they're in, you know, the old saying, be the arrow or be the aim. Well, it's
right.
Not so far away. You have to be. And the beauty of this hypnosis idea, which is many things, is that if we can get to that state through relaxation, through guidance, then we can accomplish a lot of things. And there's been so much brain research done on this. Now it's mindful meditation. There's probably 50, 60. Mindful meditation is the big deal now. It's in corporations. I just recorded a video on it last night for correctional officers. It is a state of being, but you can't call it hypnosis, because the moment you call it hypnosis or self-hypnosis, you have to have a goal attached to it. So we can call meditation, and meditation is done for the sake of meditation, and it has all sorts of benefits that we could name forever, but once you apply a goal to it, you can call it applied imagination, you can call it visualization, but to achieve that, to imprint an outcome that we want in the subconscious, which guides us, then you label it hypnosis. Or you can label it something else.
It was many, I don't even want to say how many years ago, that I first met you, and I still remember something you taught us, and I don't know if this was a basic for you or you remember this, something about if you want to change a behavior, you think of that behavior and then you like crush it with a hammer And then you replace it, think five times, say, state what you want the new, better behavior to be. Does that ring a bell with you?
Yeah, well, it certainly does because I still use it in my private practice. I've just updated a little bit.
How does it work now?
I didn't know what's called a
reframing
exercise.
What is it? That's a reframe. For me, as a young college student, it was so powerful, and I have never forgotten it.
Let me give it so your listeners. What I do is whatever behavior you want to change, but let's say it's self-confidence. So you close your eyes, you relax, you imagine a giant mirror about 6 feet by 4 feet off to your left, another one off, an identical mirror off to your right. So you look in the mirror on your left, and you see yourself at your worst. You see yourself being rejected. You see yourself fumbling or whatever your worst nightmare about self-confidence is. You see that as a real thing in that mirror. Then you go to the mirror on your right, and you visualize or create your ideal self to you, or asking someone out and they're, you know, they say yes, whatever it is. Giving a speech is what I use a lot, self-confidence. Then you go back to you have to apply emotion. So you go back to the other one at your worst, but you feel that horrible rejection or emotion or whatever the fear is. You go back to the right, you flip your emotion. You go do this about 3 or 4 times. Then you go to the left mirror. You imagine that you have a hammer. You get up and you crush the mirror on your left and make it disappear. You then walk into the mirror on your right and become it, so that you're looking down at your body, you're feeling the emotion, you're looking, you know, at whatever scenario or script you've written for yourself. So that can work with weight. It can work with smoking, and it's so, you're right, it is so powerful.
Is it really that simple, though?
Yeah, it's really that simple. Well, if I did that with you, you did a workshop after my show, because I don't do that in the show. What I used to do, I would do the show, and then I'd do a small little workshop, image training. And with that workshop, that was part of what I did in the workshop. So that's what you remember, and it really is that simple. But also, if you remember, I think what I did is I had everyone lie down on the floor, and I took you through a very deep relaxation. Does that ring a bell with you?
Well, you know, I actually, since I booked you, I picked you up from the airport and drove you back, so I think we had some time to chat. So I don't know if it came from the official program. We're talking
a long time ago.
More years than I want to admit to.
Because I met you when you were up, and I did the Breakthrough Thinking Seminar in Detroit, which was released on a video. I was in touch with him last week, and we shot that at some movie theater.
Yeah, at Imagine Theater in Novi.
Right.
Yeah. So what percentage of the people realize the power of the subconscious? I mean, it really seems to rule us, don't you think? And do you think people are aware of that?
Well, I don't think people quite understand it, but I have come up with this kind of wonderful metaphor for it, and it's what will be when I get my new book published. It is our conscious mind. That you have to give some values to the different parts of our mind. The conscious mind is the part of our mind that thinks. It's the critical, analytical part. It is the most recent part of our brain that allows us to project in the future and see multiple pathways. So it's the visionary, if you will. And then there's the subconscious. The subconscious is it doesn't think in the traditional sense. It is ruled by our primitive fight or flight. So it's fear-based or love-based, but mainly fear-based. It runs our body. So we don't think about breathing. We don't think about digesting. It is the primitive part that keeps us functioning. And the beauty of it is it can't tell the difference between a real or an imagined experience. That's a primitive part of the brain. So the metaphor is we are like a tiny little rider, a human rider, R-I-D-E-R, sitting on top a massive 6,000-pound elephant. And the elephant is our subconscious, and we cannot control it. You know, this is the good news and the bad news. We cannot control, but we can influence. So people that feel they can control themselves or that willpower should rule, that's a myth. First of all, willpower actually drains the brain of glucose. So I call it draining the brain. So willpower was never meant to be enforced for long periods of time. It's a jump starter. And if you try, and you know this because people set all these resolutions at New Year's Eve that require a major shift in their thinking and a change or influencing their subconscious, but they just think that willpower is going to do it, and they slide. they fail because you can only use willpower for so long. So the trick is how do you take that 10% of our mind, and by the way, the 90%, this is all based in neuroscience now, 90% is the subconscious, which rules, and it controls us, period. It makes us go left if we want to go right. The 10% is the part of us that can influence the subconscious. Hypnosis is one way to do that. Does that kind of make sense?
Well, you know,
sense?
It brings up a lot of things. Wouldn't it behoove us to get a hold of our subconscious? Because if it's 90% controlling us, and you talked about willpower, I always say I have very little willpower. I'm bad with willpower. Can you improve your willpower by getting a hold of your subconscious?
No, willpower is willpower. Willpower is only that 10% of us. It's not. Willpower has very little to do with the subconscious. The subconscious, the elephant, wants us to stay the same. It does not like change,
right.
And it wants us to walk the status quo because it's designed primitively to keep us safe, to keep us alive. So willpower is all of us. You may say you don't have a little willpower, but I suspect that's a judgment about past results more than having or not having. We all have willpower. If you make it any kind of a decision, you're using willpower for that decision. It gets you on a track, and it can hold you there for a while. If I make a decision to, all right, I don't really want to go down and work on my screenplay today, I really don't. But my willpower will get me in front of the computer, and then the rest takes care of itself. So the willpower is a jump starter.
Well, I think some people have more of it, and some people have less. And what I could talk about the subconscious all day because I think it's pretty powerful when people realize how much that you said it's 90% of
90%.
Yeah. So how do we get a hold of it and make it be more positive or get more positive results in our life?
You have to look at what the subconscious responds to. It is emotionally based. It's the center of our emotions. So you keep that in mind. Emotions are a trigger. It cannot tell the difference between a real or an imagined experience. If you remember, I took a lemon and I held it up and I had people imagine biting a lemon, and then I took a big bite out of it. About 95% of the audience had some kind of a response to that. Out of nothing, out of pure imagination. So imagination, that beautiful word, controlled or applied imagination with emotion is a very powerful tool to influence the subconscious. That then is called visualization. So when we visualize, we look in the future and we create something called a goal or what I call an ideal end result. And you have to make it realistic, because if it isn't realistic, then the subconscious gets overwhelmed and it melts down. So in other words, if I am 240 pounds and I want to lose 40 pounds in a week, even if my intention was there, even if I had willpower, I'm going to fail because that's an unrealistic goal. So you create a goal or an outcome, a future event that you would like to achieve that is realistic, mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, or social, and you create it as a vivid picture. In other words, you have to make it real. It can't be, oh, I want to make money. The subconscious doesn't get that. I want to lose weight. Subconscious doesn't get that. I want to love more. That doesn't mean anything. So you have to make it real and precise. So I'll give you an example about the script. I could give you 100 examples. So my goal today is to write 2 pages of script. Doesn't sound like much, but it is a horrendous amount. But it's realistic. So I actually envision myself, I'll do a little meditation, kind of self-relaxation, and I see myself going down to the computer with my bottle of water. I see myself sitting there. I see myself pulling out the pages, and at the end of it, joyfully, with great satisfaction, holding those two pages. So that's a visualization. And I repeat it two or three times. Now, I do bigger ones for many other things, for projects. So if you want to influence the subconscious, you influence it by emotionally based, vivid, colorful pictures, images, or mental movies. Now, let's go back to meditation. Meditation is a little different. Meditation is so powerful and so healing that most people don't understand that a 20-minute deep relaxation will influence their functioning of their brain for 6 to 7 hours. You'll be more creative. It'll be like a buffer against external stress. You're more productive. You're more innovative. And that just requires you to learn a system, whatever system it is, there are many, to relax deeply for 20 minutes. Then when you incorporate a goal, or what I just described, to influence the subconscious, that becomes visualization.
So you think visualization and meditation?
Well, it's a trick. Yes, the answer is, if I were to choose the two for health and happiness, I'd say learn to meditate. I wouldn't say anything else.
All right, because, and I want to ask a question, but you have a book, Applied Imagination, James Mapes. Is that what you go over in this book, pretty much what you just talked about?
Well, Quantum Leap Thinking, An Owner's Guide to the Mind. That's my book that's out. That's the bestseller.
Okay.
That I go over specifically. I talk about vision. I talk about risk-taking because you have to learn how to take risk. I mean, if you want to grow, then you can't keep doing the same thing over and over. If you expect, you know, I'll give you a radical example. Every year, I suggest to people to do a relationship house cleaning. Now, this means that we have to look at our lives to see if we have spirit drainers or life drainers or joy drainers. And my wife and I have agreed on this for 26 years. We do it a lot. So if you meet somebody that is trying to take stuff from you, emotionally dependent, or just negative.
Trying to steal your joy, maybe?
What?
Trying to steal your joy.
Well, they do
maybe.
Steal your joy. Yeah. That's a wonderful way to put it, and there are people that do it. I go for walks every day when it's warm, and I listen to people talk. I go down to the beach for an hour, and I walk, and I listen to people. And I wrote an article on this a couple years ago. I bet you that I hear 75% to 80% of people complaining. So I wrote an article called No Complaining. And see if you can do it for a day. You know, about the weather, about another person, about yourself. You know, that's also what to do. So we have a group of people around us. Many of them are artists, but there are a couple scientists and doctors. Everybody wants to come to our dinner parties because they're always meeting somebody different, and they're always meeting people who are cheerleaders. So let's say that I have a success. No one gets jealous. Everybody throws a party. Everybody congratulates. If somebody in my life does something I'm trying to do and I haven't been successful, boy, do I stand up and cheer for them, because their success is my success. When you surround yourself with joyful, supportive people, that all comes back to you.
Right. So I feel like some people, if they did relationship cleaning, they'd have nobody left in their life.
Well, maybe not.
Wonderful people and connect with them? How do you connect with them or find them?
Well, first you work on yourself because, you know, the law of attraction, I have a little problem with it.
That's my toughest one, the law of attraction. So I can't wait to hear what your thoughts
are. Well, make it simple. Your listeners can do this when they get off the line. Close your eyes. And then open your eyes and look around the room that you're in and notice everything that's red or orange, right? So you notice, you spot, and then you close your eyes again. And then I want you to recall everything that's blue. And people are going to crack up because what they remember is the red and orange. And then they'll look around and they say, wow, look at all this blue stuff that was around me. I didn't notice it. Because once we have a mindset, once we imprint our mind, this is why visualization is so important, we notice, it's like putting up little antennae on our consciousness and a radar that goes out and notices what we believe to be true. So if you think everybody's trying to rip you off, guess who you're going to see? Then there's another part of this. We are designed on a primitive subconscious level as a problem solver. That's what kept us alive as a human race. So if we're designed, if that's in our DNA, what do we need? We need problems.
Well, yeah, that's true.
We need problems.
Right.
So if we don't have problems, we are going to create problems. Now, that's letting the subconscious control us. Right there is what I just, all that. We spot problems. We're solving. We, instead of listening to someone like a spouse or a relationship or a friend, you try to solve their problem. Worst thing you can do. Listening is an art. That's a whole other conversation. So what we need to do is condition our brain, and now all neuroscience is showing the plasticity, neuroplasticity. The science used to believe that we stopped learning at 60, 70 years old, and the brain was formed. No, unless we get Alzheimer's or something, we can change the wiring of our brain until we are no longer on this earth. So anyone listening, thinking they can't learn anything, that's old thinking. You can learn anything you want, and you can rewire your brain. It's actually changing your brain. It physically, neurologically, changes your brain when you meditate, when you visualize. So back to what you said about the law of attraction. We see what we expect to see, and that includes, if I said, listen, I'm going to show you some videos of blonde Swedes, right? So I have you for 5 minutes watch videos of blonde people. And then I turn you loose in a mall in Michigan. Who are you going to notice? You're going to notice blonde people. So why wouldn't that work with emotional people? Why wouldn't it work with what we need to be successful? Some call it meaningful coincidence. Some call it, I don't believe in that. I don't even believe in luck. I believe we create our luck. Now, if you remember The Secret, that made $100 billion. It's good stuff. I have one problem with it. It showed a little kid with a visualized bike, and he opened the door, and there's a bike. The part of this that most people don't understand is you have to take some action. Right? You don't just visualize and stay home and not take any risks and not communicate and not socialize and expect something to happen. That's crazy. So what you do is you visualize, then you go out and you meet people, or you move in the world, or you do things a little differently, or you read more, you read different things. If you like fiction, read nonfiction. I always tell people to shake up their mind a little bit. And then we start to make new connections. And those new connections lead us to our goals, back again, mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, social, or relationships.
Okay, a couple of things here. You don't believe in coincidences, but I feel like I met you many years ago and then saw you speak again a year ago and was able to have this interview today, and I felt like it was all meant to be. I mean, granted, I did go to the event and I did bring you and hire you to appear, and I did set up this interview today, so I did take some action, but you don't think that's all interconnected, or is it just totally random?
Well, no, I think if you look back at who you are, who you are, it's a very logical progression. And who I am. So it's a very logical progression that you hired me for whatever reason. I was, very popular on the campus circuit. So, I was available and visible and had tons of publicity. So you hired me. And that impacted you. That event, you just said it. I mean, that really impacted you.
Definitely.
So when you saw me a year, 2 years, whatever it was that I was in, well, it would be logical that do you go to other events like that over at that theater?
Not a lot, but somebody did reach out to me and said you were going to be there, and I had to go. I had to go see you.
Well,
after
there you go. I mean, it would be, that's certainly connected back to then. And the fact that you have a radio interview, and I love doing interviews, and you reached out to me, but you read to me. This is what I'm talking about, taking action. Now, we can say it's meant to be. Listen, I was married for 16 years. I'm still great friends with my ex-wife. It was like fire and ice. And I met my present wife 26 years ago, and it was like a soulmate, which I don't actually believe in, you see. I think I matured through the pain of my first marriage. I changed my brain. I grew up. I became emotionally mature enough to be able to handle the woman that I'm with. I don't handle her anyhow. She handles me. But it's a perfect match. Our values are the same, which is another conversation. You see, I just did a little thing for someone. If you don't know your top values, then how are you going to be able to spot things in the world that resonate with your top values? Because our values are our compass. I think I said this 2 years ago, if you remember. My top three values are love, freedom, and play. Then I've got a couple other ones. So if I want to stay on course in my life, the goals I choose have to involve those. The people I meet have to at least embrace them. They don't have to match them, but they have to embrace them. So that becomes my compass. So there's, you know, Carl Jung called, the word is synchronicity. I believe in synchronicity. It's meaningful coincidence. And back to the law of attraction. We see and we take in the information and what we need in life to satisfy who we are. So let's do something really radical. If someone is every time as a little human being, they're burned with a cigarette when somebody says, I love you, that brain's already being trained. So when they grow up, that incident's going to be forgotten, but they're going to seek out pain so that they feel love. I mean, I've worked with people like this for years to help them rewire their brain. And the pain may not be a burned cigarette, but the pain may be somebody that rejects them. I've met people who have, they have a terrible marriage, and then they make a decision, I'm never going to do that again. They go out and they meet someone who looks different, but in the end it's the same thing.
So does that mean you have to be more self-aware? You have to be aware and want to change?
Well, first of all, you have to know thyself. You know, you have to invest in learning about yourself, the dark side, the light side, your values, your priorities. You need to learn as much about this being. And believe me, I'm here talking about this. I still fight my own demons. But luckily the demons haven't taken me over, you know.
Right.
I still go to the dark side, and I honor the dark side. I mean, I go, okay, Mapes, there you go. There you go back to your little child, immature, want what you want when you want it. That's not the way the world works. Patience. So I do a meditation. My goal is to be more patient. I am more patient.
Well, do you think, I hate to generalize like this, but I think seeing the world as problems is more of a guy thing. And I'll give an example of my wonderful brother. He has a daughter, and she needed some shoes, and we went shopping, and I helped her pick out the shoes, and he said, does that solve the problem? And we just looked at each other and said, getting shoes is not a problem.
I think you're absolutely right. I think men should be smacked in the head because what they do, right? The woman, I'm, this is because there are other kinds of relationships, but say when my wife comes to me and she presents a problem, my instinct, because it's my primitive self, I'm the guy who, you know, the males went out and fought the things and got the food. So I want to go, well, here's the solution. Well, that doesn't, she doesn't want to hear that.
No.
She wants me to listen.
And be on her side. We just want you all to be on our side.
Yes. To be a partner. And I, by the way, I always do. I don't do this problem-solving thing anymore at all.
That just comes from how you look at the world. If you look at everything as a problem or something that needs to be solved, then, as you said, I think that's all you're going to see.
My wife tells a wonderful story that dinner parties that cracks me up. You remember? Did you see the film Braveheart?
No.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, in Braveheart, there's an army. This is the Mel Gibson film, right? So there's an army that comes over one hill of men, and there's an army that come over, and they slash each other, and they kill each other, and it's just a horrible thing. And my wife often says, listen, if it was two armies of women, kilts, and that guy, because they don't wear kilts, but all the things, that, and they come over the hills, they would have stopped and said, well, you know what? That's great. Where did you get that? Who made that for you? they would never have fought. They would have...
they would have seen it in a whole different way.
The biggest laughs that ever come from that story are men.
Yeah.
They get
it. Well, that's because you've surrounded yourself with people who get it.
Yeah, that's true. I also surround myself a lot with women, by the way. I don't play golf. I'm not a sports person. Probably any male listening to this is going to say, ooh. But I'm just not. My brother is. My father is. I just, I race cars. I balloon. I do karate. I'm a doer, and watching something just for me, for James Mapes, doesn't do it for me. I don't have enough time to live life. I don't want to watch reality shows of other people. I just have no patience, not one little bit. I want to be out there doing the reality show.
Right, I agree with you. And I think I'm the way that I'm just a big mushball right now. I have meditated and found that my greatest gift, and I think we all have gifts, is that I have a large capacity to love. It took me a while to figure that out. I thought, great, how am I going to earn a living with that? But it just continues to grow inside of me, and I've been through a lot in my life. I lost a sister to breast cancer. I had a son who was paralyzed, who's actually going on his feet and going to med school, so very proud of him. Lots of things going on, people who have fought cancer, and every day it brings it to a head that I just want to love people and bring laughter into the world, and I call myself the great distractor. However, I have another job, and I work for a commercial radio station that has a lot of conservative talk shows. It's a powerhouse station in the Detroit area, but one of the hosts said something yesterday, and they just talk, and a lot of it is really negative, and he said something about, well, if you're abused as a child, you never get over that. And I thought, really? I'm a hopeful person. I try to bring hope and inspiration to people, but is that something that you can get over? Can you live a healthy life?
Oh, my goodness. My new book covers the last three chapters are Letting Go and Forgiveness, the Ultimate Let Go.
Awesome.
I have worked with people for 35 years, helping them heal their stuff from childhood. And the answer is absolutely you can. Absolutely. It's all about forgiveness and letting go, and there are specific tools to do that. I mean, I can't give you the tools on our interview, but I've seen people transform themselves. So that, what that person is saying to you basically is, I am never going to get over that.
Mm-hmm.
When I hear stuff like that, it has nothing to do with anyone else, believe me. It has to do with that person. So that, there's just, and by the way, some people enjoy holding on to this stuff. And
that's the thing I don't understand. Why do people want to be miserable?
Want to be miserable. They don't say, I want to be miserable. What they don't want to do is let go and forgive. You see, forgiveness isn't just some fly-by-night thing. I mean, this is brain science, back of brain science again, is, listen, how can you take a pill of poison and expect someone else to die?
Exactly.
And that is what unforgiveness is. And to me, there are only two emotions in life. My teachings are based on this. My life is based on this. There's fear and there's love. There ain't nothing else. You could throw any emotion at me and it will fit in those categories. When fear exists, love cannot. When love exists, fear cannot. So our job, conscious human being, if we want a life of what I call an exceptional life, is to forgive on a moment-to-moment basis and also work on the big stuff. Now, forgiveness does not mean that you forget, and forgiveness does not mean that you let somebody off the hook. You see, a lot of people, well, I'm not going to forgive because they don't deserve forgiveness. Well, it's got nothing to do with the other person at all.
Right.
And forgiveness does not necessarily mean reconciliation. Forgiveness is about you. It's about letting that horrible place inside of us go. And that, by the way, is accomplished through visualization techniques and regression techniques.
You're the one who's being hurt by it. You're the one holding on to all the anger and the hate and the negative feelings, and you're basically only hurting yourself, right?
Well, of course you are. You can't somebody thinks that you're punishing someone. They've got to get a grip on reality. What I call it, let's make friends with reality, which is part of, I'm going to ease us into the patient thing too, but I'm going
to. Yes, we're getting to that right now.
You know, it's the number, I believe the number one thing in life is to make friends with reality, which means see things as they are, not as you want them to be.
However, I think reality is different for everybody. Everybody sees things differently, don't you think?
Oh, and there's no question. But what I'm talking about reality is most men, believe me, my father didn't go to a doctor for 38 years because he was scared. I'm knowing guys, and mostly men, by the way, who deny the smoking is bad. They may watch commercials, but they don't get it. They deny that over-drinking is bad, because I have my martini every day. They deny that a relationship is bad, right? So when you deny, you cannot change anything. And by making friends with reality, seeing things as they really are, a book is not, you know, this is a book I'm holding in my hand. It's not a piece of candy. I mean, it's really seeing things as they are.
Right.
That's when you can change things. And for the positive. So yeah, we all have different realities, but that's kind of an existential argument. There are things that are just true.
Mm-hmm.
And what's true is if you're sick, you need to see a doctor.
Right. And if you're having surgery, James Mapes has a wonderful new program for you. And tell us about that, please.
Well, let me tell you how it came about. In fact,
okay.
My wife goes in for surgery next Monday, and she's actually using my program right
good.
Now.
Good. I mean, good for the program. Sorry about the surgery.
For over three decades to help them prepare for surgery. All kinds, brain, back, knee, everything. And 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, I was shooting a film in Scotland as an actor, a thriller. And I got home, I got depressed back in Connecticut, and I couldn't figure out why, so I went to my doctor. And the short of the story is 3 days later, I found out I had an aortic aneurysm. And I had to get a valve replacement. So I freaked out, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, you know, I've been working with people for many years, so let me become my own guinea pig. Let me create a program, a real program that I can put on a DVD that is going to transform people's experience of surgery. Because the reality is, here's what I know James Mapes has done. You can remove all fear before surgery. You can help people heal faster and get off narcotics faster. So I created this program, and it's called Patient Pre-Op Post-Op Healing Therapy. It's two discs. One, the first disc is like a 76-minute interactive seminar, and the second disc is the visualization relaxation you listen to twice a day, 20 minutes before surgery. And what it does, and by the way, I have not been successful in some of my coaching sometimes. It's just the way it is. But this is never missed. What it does is remove all fear, which changes your brain. It changes the way you release chemicals, fear-based chemicals, cortisol, hormones. So you go into surgery relaxed. It moves blood away from the point of incision at the beginning of surgery, and it automatically flows back at the end of surgery. Now, this is all pre-programmed in your subconscious by listening to this. You get off you use 30 to 40% less narcotics. In other words, it helps you control your pain. 4, you heal 25 to 30% faster. Most surgeons and doctors, after this program, they go, I don't get it, but I get it. You know, I understand the brain is that powerful. Excuse me. So that is the program. It's Patient Pre-Op Post-Op Healing Therapy.
So there are discs that you get and listen to, or how do you access it?
It's a CD, or you can download it from my website. But and I've got Yale School of Medicine, the head of cardiothoracic surgery, has endorsed the program, has been behind this. And I'll tell you, I am so excited about it. We're just launching the program, really. It's been out there for a while, but I'm not a good marketer. I'm a creator.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the program is if anyone who is going for any kind of surgery that has any fear, boy, this is going to do it for them. It doesn't. It's just simply through what we've been speaking about. It controls and influences the subconscious to do all these things, to reduce our fear, reduce it, mute the fear.
Does
heal
it work
faster.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
What if you have a powerful white coat syndrome like I do for any kind of medical situation? Could it work for that as well?
Absolutely. Because it reduces
so how do
your
we,
fear.
How do you find it? How do you get it? Here's your chance
well,
to market
you,
it. We want to get
just,
the James Mapes new program.
Well, just no. Just go to my website. Everything. I've got videos on my website. I've got, clips you can watch. Excuse me again. I've got a bit of a cough today, so I apologize.
Oh, okay.
You go to www.jamesmapes.com and look at the website. It's all
okay.
there.
It sounds wonderful. I think I might try it for my own situation. Even without surgery, you're saying, if you have any kind of medical situation, it would be helpful?
Yes.
It
and
seems
there
like...
are other there are other programs on there for stress reduction, for creativity, for sports improvement. I've tried to cover a lot of areas with this.
Mm-hmm.
With this visualization and deep relaxation.
Well, it seems like we're hearing so much more these days about the body-mind connection, and that would affect all areas of your health, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that the last – I mean, if anybody who goes to bookstores, if they still do, you can see all these books on the brain. They're bestsellers.
Right.
There's a reason for that. What was taught back 20, 30 years ago by, you know, Dr. Norman Vincent Peale or Zig Ziglar or W. Clement Stone or Magic of Thinking Big or Psycho-Cybernetics, very few, they didn't have the machinery to measure the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So now neuroscience sees that all these things that just we thought worked because, hey, positive thinking works, there's a reason for it. It affects the brain, it rewires the brain, and it changes the brain for the better.
All right, we've got a caller on the line. Hello, caller. Do you have a question for James Mapes?
Hi, Mr. Mapes. My name is Ben.
Hi, Ben.
I'm a first-year medical student here in Michigan. Big interest in science, big interest in healing. Been through a couple surgeries myself and definitely noticed the power of others being around, positive thoughts, positive healing, being involved. But I have a question. I'm a scientist, and... you know, I like when things are clinically proven. You know, you've got statistics and you've got trials involved. Do you have any intent to try clinical trials or try, you know, a controlled line study, something like that?
Well, you're a gift from heaven. I tell you this, I am looking for someone to take this program, which I said is endorsed by Yale,
yeah,
and do a clinical study with it. I am putting this out. I put it out on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about to put it out to 20,000 people in my newsletter. I'm looking for somebody who say, wow, okay, here's the program. I got it. This is simple, easy stuff for people to understand. I'm going to do a thesis on it, and I'm going to do some blind studies, and we're going to take 50 people that listen to this program that are going to surgery and 50 people who don't, and we're going to do a clinical study. So, boy, if you could give me suggestions on this, I would be extremely happy. I mean, you're right. That's the piece I'm missing. I know it works. Every single person who has been through the surgery that is endorsed program, including the head of cardiothoracic surgery at Yale,
mm-hmm.
knows it works. But I want a clinical study on this.
Definitely. Well, you know, reaching out to you sound like you've got a good start with endorsements. But, yeah, reaching out to the science side of it can be tricky from my experience. Some things that are considered non-traditional often get dismissed too fast, but I guess as it builds up those, you know, anecdotal evidence that it works in individual cases, hopefully it starts getting attention, then you get some clinical trials and get to start using that. I know surgeons like to listen to music when they're operating. That helps them, so definitely the power of audio related to medicine and healing is a strong one. So hopefully we see something like that.
Well, let me give
future.
You another thought that
yeah.
is interesting. The subconscious never stops listening, ever. So what I do as part of this program is I have the patient go to their anesthesiologist and or the head nurse and or the surgeon. And what they do is they create two or three sentences that are read during their surgery. Now, remember, the subconscious does not stop here, and this has all been proven. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
You never want to hear, you never want to be under anesthesia and have somebody say, oops, you know, or gee, this is a tough surgery, because that part of us that still is listening is not the conscious mind. It is the part that controls our entire system, our entire physiology.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a thought about this, is that during surgery, you want someone, you know, people to repeat, this is going well, da 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 da, towards the end of the surgery, and it's just two or three times. It's like a hypnotic suggestion in an odd way.
Okay.
So
yes.
Your subconscious can hear while you're knocked out during surgery?
Absolutely.
Uh-oh.
Oh, absolutely.
I think more doctors need to be aware of that then, don't you think?
Well, there are many doctors that are aware of it.
Uh-huh.
There are many and more. Listen, with all the brain science that's out there now about all this that we're talking about today, is the consciousness. I did a grand rounds, which is where all the doctors and head nurses come together at 7 a.m. in the morning, and they have a speaker once a month, and then later they discuss what went wrong and how they can fix it. I did a grand round. The head of the hospital, I wanted to sell him on this idea, so I had a meeting with him, and he's been meditating for 30 years. So he said, hey, you don't have to convince me. I'm here to help you run through all the red tape that we're going to encounter. And that's what you're saying. The hospitals today, it's completely different, because it's all about money. It's all about patient satisfaction. The key that I'm trying to get people to do with this program is say, this is going to amp up your patient satisfaction, therefore you're going to get more money. And so that's my pitch for this. So anyhow, I did the grand rounds, and it was magical, because everybody got it. I took people through a five-minute meditation. They got about the subconscious. I did a little hypnosis demonstration, because that's like, boy, that's in-your-face subconscious. And, this is very exciting.
Well, maybe Ben will be using that someday in his medical practice.
Site. And in fact, Ben, if you email me and say you spoke on the show, I will send you a free download for this program.
All right.
And
I'll definitely
download it and listen to both the first kind of little mini seminar and the two suggestions, and spread it around.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'll be in medical school the next 4 years. I'll be doing surgery rotations, and maybe you can pass those words on to someone. I'm sure, though, you know, if you get trials out there and you've got science behind it, you can get that information passed on by itself. You know, the news spreads faster than the medical community, and we're trying to get, like you said, as effective patient satisfaction as we can. Anything that improves it will be picked up fast.
Well, that's from your mouth to God's ears.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Mabes.
My great pleasure.
Thank you for calling. James Mabes, I cannot tell you, this was meant to be. I've enjoyed talking to you so much. I'm still afraid of my subconscious. Is there something we can walk around and say to ourselves so we can have an improved...
I'll give you you're afraid of your subconscious? Your subconscious is you. Are you afraid of yourself?
Well, but I don't know if I'm... Are we in touch with it? It's controlling us, and it's deep, deep, deep. How do we get in there?
This Emile Coué, I think it was 17th century physician. Anyhow, you've probably heard this. He came up with this little saying, every day in every way I'm getting better and better. And he said, now if you say this 100 times a day, twice a day, you're going to change. So suddenly it became the rage of society.
And they mocked it on SNL on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. And by the way, you are what you say most to yourself. So that you don't have to say that little saying, but anything that you create, I have a system I give to people called CBS to BBS, and it's like a 10-minute speech, but it's taking a current view of a situation and making it better, and then reminding yourself whenever we have a thought about the future or about what's going to happen, we have an image, right? And we just come up with that image, but we never stop to say, well, how do I make that better than I'm thinking? What can I add to it? What can I have people say? What can I improve? My example was, I was flying to Hong Kong to give a speech, And my thought is, oh, this long plane ride, I'm going to be exhausted when I get there. That was my first thought. I said, wait a minute, why don't you take your own advice? This is going to be a great time. Take your new Michael Crichton book. At that time, that's what I was reading, and take up something to write with and make it a great, and I did, by the way. So I took a current view of the situation, made it a better view of the situation. And so I say CBS to BBS takes about 2 minutes, twice a day, and I do this every day, by the way, and it starts to remind myself to make the situation better in my mind, which is influencing my subconscious.
All right. Well, we will keep that in mind. James Mapes, tell us again how we can connect to you and get a hold of your pre-op, post-op surgery healing therapy program again.
Well, they can email me at james@jamesmapes.com or go to www.jamesmapes.com. Poke around the site. There's wonderful stuff for free on it.
And you're available to speak, and you have books out, and you're just
right.
A gift to the world, and thank you
so much.
I'm
a business speaker. That's what I do. That gives me the income to do all this other stuff.
And it's just so, and you've got books coming up, so please come back to talk to us when you've got more projects you'd like to talk about, because I cannot begin to tell you how much I enjoyed your conversation today, how inspiring you have been to me for many, many years and still are today.
And thank you so much for having me on. It's been a great pleasure.
All right. Thank you, James Mapes. Check him out. He's got a lot of great information. He's a wonderful human being. And if you'd like to get a hold of me, Lisa Love Barry, Barry, @gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter @Lisa_Barry. And we will be back again next week. Thank you so much for listening.